You're listening to some of our favorite moments and guests from 2016. One Rosie on the House guest always gets Rosie fired up, and that's Dr. Sky. From blood red moons to meteorites to fireballs, we love our time talking about everything in the sky.
We're going to bring in Dr. Sky. There's been a lot of big news of things going up and on in the universe, and you're going to have to exercise your brain. So this next few minutes is going to be like brain calisthenics. Let's bring Dr. Sky into the conversation. Good morning, Dr. Sky. Thank you for joining Rosie on the House.
Good morning, Rosie and Romeo. It's a pleasure to be with you, folks.
And I never, ever bring Dr. Sky in without starting the program. How fast is the speed of light?
186,282 miles per second on this early Saturday morning. How about that?
180,000 miles per second.
186,282. Okay. There you go. Okay. Super fast.
And so if we got in a spaceship traveling at the speed of light and launched it from Scottsdale Airport, how long would it take us to get to the end of the known universe traveling 186,000 miles per second?
What we think, about 13.5 billion miles on, billion light years, excuse me, 186,282 miles per second. It's about 13.5 billion light years just to one edge of the universe. So.
And you got to turn around and go to the other side.
That's exactly right. It's incredible.
What has blown my mind more than that is I somehow stumbled across this video, our galaxy is a vortex, and the way, instead of thinking about the planets rotating around the sun.
With everything rotating around it, and then every planet has a couple moons orbiting around it. Mm-hmm. Okay, I got that picture in my head.
But this video illustrates the motion around the sun while the sun is moving, and yet another circular 77,000 whatever lights.
Really?
I mean, just I'll put a link to it, but it's called Our Galaxy is a Vortex. And it to go around our galaxy once, according to this video, for the sun to go around once, 226 million years.
Right, and that's called a cosmic year, guys. That's the longest time interval that we know. So how about that, Rosie?
That alone will warm up your oatmeal.
I'm already awake. I love it.
Okay. Well, we brought Dr. Sky on because there's history-making news going on in space. But before we get to it, Dr. Sky, let's go back to Astronomy 101. Define for us the difference between a meteor, a meteorite, a comet, and an asteroid.
Well, let's start with the biggest of them all. Comets are these objects which some astronomers describe as dirty snowballs, and that needs a better introduction because an object that, let's say, has a diameter of 10 miles, I'm going to use 10 miles as probably a smaller lower limit. These are debris that were left over from the creation of the solar system. And they have this little, like you'd take a donut and sprinkle on some light white powdered sugar, let's say. This is the snow coating or materials. They call these the volatile materials on the surface of a comet. And what these objects do is they're way out there beyond Pluto. They're in a cloud called, the astronomers call this an Oort cloud. And every so often, the hand of gravity pulls in a few of these objects. So comets are rather large chunks of material left over from the creation of the solar system. They produce tails because a lot of those volatiles burn off as they get heated as they get closer to the sun. Now, those in themselves are dangerous objects if they get too close to the Earth. But going back to the smaller particles, you have these little tiny shattered objects in space which are called, and some of them are pretty large, I should say, asteroids, between the orbits of Mars and Jupiter. We all know that from basic astronomy. Some of them can range from the size of a speck of beach sand all the way up to the giant Ceres, the asteroid. Those are okay, and we have to be careful of what comes close to the Earth called near-Earth objects. But the other little objects, they're called meteoroids. They float around in space from the meteor showers. They come into the atmosphere as a meteor, and then if they successfully hit the ground, like we know the object on June 2nd that was up over Payson,
yes.
If you find one on the ground, you found a meteorite. It thus becomes part of the Earth. The object transfers from meteoroid meteor as it burns up, and if it doesn't completely burn up, you've got meteorite.
Do they name those? Do we have a name for the one that hit Arizona?
That's an interesting question, and I've talked to Bill Cook over there at NASA that I stay in touch with. He's the expert on the orbital elements of this, but no, it doesn't have an official name. It would just be basically called the June 2nd Arizona meteor fall.
Okay. All right. And so where does asteroid fall in all of that again?
It's kind of in the middle. They're smaller than most comets, and I say most being a generalist this morning. But the asteroids, just remember, this big body of objects that's between Mars and Jupiter, if you were to look down on top of the whole solar system and you had eyes that could see these things in entirety, you'd see these a whole field of debris, like a Saturn's ring, so to speak, but kind of spread out. And that's a whole other story, Rosie, that how that became unto itself, whether two objects collided or whether that's the area that was shepherded as the solar system was created. It's kind of an area to put waste and junk as the solar system, if it could talk. Maybe that's an area where all these objects were shepherded and pushed in by gravity between Jupiter and the sun.
Now, that battleship-sized object that looked like a human skull that was headed towards Earth about last Halloween.
Yes.
That was like all too creepy altogether all at one time.
It is very creepy.
Was that a meteor, or was that an asteroid, or was that a comet?
Well, that was a small asteroid, and it was one of the dangerous things, theoretically, we call the near-Earth object, or simply near-Earth asteroid. It's an asteroid, and it was probably on the size, I mean, we could go on for, there's thousands of these type of objects, but this one somehow had a face just in time for Halloween that wasn't your friendly face, and it appeared that way. It wasn't taken with a camera. That's a radar image. Imagine
that.
Radio telescope fires off a signal, and it gets like a composite image, like you did the 3D modeling. It just created this little face. That's what it was. At least it looked like a face.
It did.
Here's the problem. It's a tiny little object that probably, if it were to get too close to the Earth, would make the June 2nd and the Russian event that came through the atmosphere in 2013, called Chelyabinsk, just a walk in the park. Because if it hit the Earth, absolute devastation, not global devastation, but it's something we have to be concerned about, Rosie. These objects called near-Earth objects, we did not see all of them, and there's many reasons why we don't.
I want to talk about that, because when we had you on in November talking about that particular asteroid, you said it came to us from the blind side of the universe.
Yes,
now,
it did.
The concept of a blind side of the universe, when we have the number of satellites orbiting Earth, and I want to get to Juno, the one we just sent to Jupiter,
you
would think with all those eyes in the sky, there'd be no blind side of the universe.
Well, you'd think so. And in this case, not to alarm your listeners that are just waking up here on Saturday morning, any further than we have to, or any more than we have to, an object like this, that one tiny little thing, as we call it, the skull phase, it basically came from as if you're staring at the sun right now. If you're driving, don't do that. If you're walking your dog, don't do that, and don't do that anyway. But imagine as you stare in toward the sun, you know how overpowering and you don't want to do it. That's the general direction where, let's say, that particular asteroid came from. So no matter how sophisticated a telescope we have or a spacecraft, there's always an area in space where the sun is shining, even if you're out there. And I haven't been, but just imagine in your mind's eye this morning as you're out in space and you look toward the sun. The object that we're talking about in this case came directly from that area, so there's no way that you'd be able to detect this. And the point is that the object that we called the skull face for Halloween, this asteroid, we saw it only days or in some cases hours after it came from that blindsided area. So that's the dangerous type of object.
Hardly.
Luckily, there aren't too many.
Luckily, there aren't. Bruce Willis must stay suited up, right? That's the moral of that story. Particularly historical week this week. Why don't you talk us through this Juno spacecraft?
Well, Rosie, this is a great story here. In the short time we have, this is a spacecraft from NASA's New Frontiers Department. This is a series of spacecraft like New Horizons last year. This one launched back in 2011. Scott Bolton, who's a good friend of mine, had him on my program. So he's the principal investigator of this mission called Juno. Now, who's Juno? Let's go back into Greek mythology. She's the wife of Jupiter. And we find out that NASA basically says that Jupiter's a person or an entity or a deity that hides himself in the clouds. And Juno, like any good woman, she can peer through the nonsense of her husband that's doing devious things, if he's indeed doing that. So we find out, Rosie, this is a family show, that Jupiter's really a serial adulterer. So all the satellites of this particular planet are named after the many mistresses of Jupiter. So Juno gets revenge on Io, one of the satellites, and one of the mistresses, and she turns her into a cow. But they couldn't have picked a better name for a spacecraft, because it's going to peer through the clouds of Jupiter. It's been traveling toward Jupiter for almost 5 years. And, Rosie, here's the most prolific thing you could tell anybody about the mission. It's traveled over 1.7 billion miles, and when it made that little burn on 4th of July when we were out having fun, it was only off 1 second from its scheduled mission. Isn't that incredible? Thinking about the passion of the spacecraft. Scott Bolton and his crew, imagine an object about 8,000 pounds in weight. This is a solar-powered spacecraft, and hey, since you're obviously the home improvement guru of the entire planet here, this particular spacecraft looks nothing more than like a giant Hunter ceiling fan. And that's exactly what somebody called me and said, you know, that thing looks like a giant ceiling fan.
Wow.
It's solar powered. Now, this is unusual, Rosie, because most of these spacecraft take its predecessor, Galileo, that went out to Jupiter a long, long time ago, spent a lot of time there. It was powered with a plutonium core, you know, a safer plutonium core. But because of the scarcity of plutonium, you just don't normally go to your local store and say, hey, give me a half a pound of plutonium. NASA decided with great new technology and solar power that they would use this technique, meaning solar power, to, you know, power up the spacecraft. And here's another interesting fact. When the Goldstone tracking giant satellite dish out in the Mojave Desert picked up the signal racing through toward Jupiter, they had to go from about 140,000 miles an hour down to a slower speed with about a 37-minute burn. But here's another cool fact. This particular signal that came from the spacecraft, Juno, is about a billionth as strong, and I said a billionth as strong as your cell phone.
Wow.
And they detected it. So all this history, the spacecraft survived this incredible, you know, deceleration into Jupiter's orbit. But it has a polar orbit. It goes north to south in about a 53-day orbit. And here's why. You, me, Romy, everybody listening, you do not want to be within the confines of Jupiter's radiation belts. As if it's fair to say that since Juno turned the great mistress, or the mistress, Io, one of the many satellites of Jupiter, into a cow, the revenge of Io in the science world is real. Because Io pumps out so much volcanic material, Jupiter sucks it up, and it helps Jupiter to ignite its auroras and thus helps to increase its magnetic and its radiation belt. So the spacecraft only stays in that radiation field for a short time. It has this big titanium box where all the hardened electronics are. So this spacecraft is going to do some amazing science. Image the poles. Talk about the magnetic Jupiter. What's below the clouds, like Juno herself, looking through and peering into Jupiter.
Now, I've got to ask. We've got 2 minutes to break. What are we going to do with that information?
Well, we're going to hopefully find out how this solar system, Rosie, was formed. Because we think we know. And Jupiter is probably the last vestige of what was created. Of course, it's the largest planet. So we need to understand the weather, because Jupiter has wicked weather with 10,000 mile an hour winds.
Wow.
We're going to learn so much over the next couple of years. It'll blow your mind. And where do you see the pictures that are going to come from this baby?